This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk, with Don Sola. With market insights and so much more, talk to Don now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Don Sola on AM 790 WPRV.
And we welcome you to the Money Talk program, everybody. I'm Don Sowa. It's Tuesday. That means it is Get Back to Basics Money Talk with Donna Sowa Allard and myself. Delighted to have you here with us during your drive time home. Hey, 3 days in a row, Donna. 3 days.
It's, you officially have a winning streak.
A winning streak here on Wall Street. It's actually some impressive numbers. I mean, stocks did end higher. Not big higher today. The Dow was up about 39 points. After actually falling as much as 180 points during the swings have been unbelievable.
I'm going to say the end of the day we may have closed up just slightly, but there the swings during the day were a bit more volatile.
So you had Goldman Sachs and Caterpillar were the biggest contributors of gains for the day, and the S&P was up about 0.25%, with financials as the best performing sector. Now, why is it that financials would do so well when one of the primary fears that everybody's talking about is rising interest rates?
Well, I was just going to say one of the reasons it would do well is because we're talking about rising interest rates. And you have to think about what makes up the financial sector. You're including companies like banks and some insurance companies where interest that they charge matters. That's what creates their profit margin, right? Interest that they're charging versus interest that they're paying out. That's their spread, and that contributes to their profit margin. So that is one part of it.
Now, ultimately, I think that the small and regional banks will be, if you say, well, what sector specifically will do best? I imagine investment banking divisions may not be as profitable if all of a sudden investors start thinking that, you know, we're starting to see better numbers, better yields on some of these bond instruments and other types of fixed income instruments that are out there, even CDs and at the bank and those types of deposit instruments are making it possible for some individuals to accept, hey, I really would rather have NCUA or FDIC insurance, you know, but I can only, maybe if a CD will pay me 3% for it, then maybe I'd go there instead of taking some of the risk that I might take working with a broker and buying brokerage-related stocks that pay dividends, for example.
Well, and see, this is really what the thing is. When you talk about, you know, shifting a risk profile, we've seen people who have maybe traditionally been depositors or people who were looking to put money in the bank and receive some level of interest for it that's guaranteed, not able to receive any meaningful amount of interest over the last few years in this historically low interest rate environment. So they were then moving from the banks and what were traditionally just deposits earning interest and having to take some risk with that money. And there's a whole lot of different levels of risk. And we've seen people who were taking no risk move to a little bit of risk. People who were before taking a little bit of risk switching maybe over from, you know, fixed income over to dividend paying stocks, which has a different level of risk. So there was an entire shift. So for some people who are more comfortable being depositors, we may be seeing them now say, okay, is the risk worth it for me anymore? Can I go back to being a depositor?
Well, it wasn't all that long ago. I had a gentleman come in with his mother, and she was indicating she had most of her money in some large, some with the long-term, fairly good-sized CDs at a bank, and she indicated that they were going to be dropping her rate at that time from about 4.5%. Down to about 1.875 at that time.
So when you consider that, that's that percent that you just describes income, and so her income was going to be cut more than in half in that.
Yeah, she said she gave me some numbers given the amount she had invested that said, yes, she was earning interest somewhere in the $750 a month range. At the high and the CDs she had, and she said that plus the roughly $1,200 she got from Social Security, her late husband's Social Security. She says that's what she lived on. She says, but now all of a sudden, by cutting it the way they're doing, she says it's going to drop her from $9,000 a year of income down to less than like four. She said, that's like a 40% cut in pay. How would you feel if your boss told you that you were going to get a 40% cut in pay? I said, well, thank God I'm the boss, because I wouldn't do that.
But if you were working and your boss did cut your pay by 40%, you'd then be going to look for a new job. And in her situation, she wasn't looking for a new job. She had to look for a new place to put her money to generate income.
Well, she said something very interesting, and you and I have talked about this before. And she said, you know, Donald, she says, I don't want to hurt your feelings, you know, all this.
And you cried.
I've listened to you on the radio. You sound like a very nice young man. She goes, and my son swears by you. He's been listening to you for years and years. But she said, I really don't want to be here.
No, because depositor, the idea of going from knowing exactly what you're going to be receiving, straight line interest, and then to suddenly have to take risk with your money can make people just have a pit in their stomach to have to suddenly take risk with their money.
Well, she followed that phrase by saying, but I don't feel I have a choice.
Yeah, and really she didn't. If she needed to generate a certain level of income, she didn't necessarily have a choice. Not one
but,
that she wanted
but
to
I,
make
I
anyway.
Did say to her, I said, you know, you're right, though. I says, you're right about the idea that you're going from what you perceived to be a fairly riskless set of financial choices to one where now all of a sudden you have to accept a level of risk that, number one, you might not be comfortable with, and number two, you're not familiar with. That lack of familiarity is a big deal. I mean, I was raised as a child at the bank, you know, with Chuchie Carroll bringing me into the city on the bus and giving me a couple of dollars to put in the little red passbook, and the lady at the window goes, cha-ching, and you look down and says, oh, there's 37 cents of interest on that, you know. But the idea of saving the money in a savings and loan or a bank, and that being a depositor, that's the way we were raised. I mean, in your generation, it's been a little bit different, because by the time you got old enough to be really looking at money seriously and understanding the value of money.
Interest rates were not terribly meaningful.
Well, they weren't, and your father was already in a business that dealt with what were the risk-leveled alternatives to putting money into savings at the bank. But in the earliest years, I mean, we did encourage Christmas clubs, you know, putting money away every week, a little bit of money if you have an allowance, and saving up that money so that you'll have a block of money at the bank when it came time to actually buy gifts, you know, because boy, it was terrible to have to try to find some money to buy presents for those people you felt obligated to buy a present for, and you didn't have any. I mean, your mother and I had Christmas clubs too that we would actually at the bank go in.
I know
and,
this.
But it was, there's lots of different ways that we think about saving money, but in the case of the lady that I was quoting, the issue of now accepting. First of all, I had to spend a lot of time making her understand when we're talking about risk, what do we really mean by that? Because I wasn't sure. She says, I have no choice but to be here. I was wondering what her it took me a little while to ensure what her expectations were going to be.
You know, and a lot of what we have heard from people is the discussion about the CD that's coming due, that they're really not going to be able to get anything for it or nothing that they consider to be meaningful. And so the next question is, what can I do that's, you know, one step above this in terms of the risk ladder or the risk profile? So then you start talking about, you know, short duration bonds and stuff like that. So it's, there really is a continuum of risk, right? It's not... all risk is not the same.
Well, even now in our own practices, like investment professionals like us, we have to be looking at things like bonds. Bonds are historically less volatile than stocks, but they also historically offer a lesser rate of return. There were periods when they were pretty impressive, but now we've had to adjust our thinking and adjust the types of bond strategies we use if we're going to use bonds at all, because the markets have changed. The economy is affecting that. Now, tomorrow we'll bring probably the most important report that we look at is the CPI number. Mm-hmm. It's maybe the most important one we've had in over 10 years, because rising inflation.
Brace for an inflation report that could change everything,
yeah,
is the headline.
I don't know whether
that's exciting.
I'm not sure that's going to be what we get, but it could cause higher interest rates. Anyway, that's what people are going to probably be prognosticating about. It's become one of the biggest risks of what has become a solid multi-year rally for the stock market. But stock market volatility has roared back recently, and in increasing inflation fears as well as the rise of interest rates are all a part of that. But the S&P has posted moves greater than 1% in six of the past eight trading days. So a 1% move one way or the other is a big part of that. So we'll talk about expectations moving forward, actually answer some specific questions that callers have had to us here on the program, and look a little bit at some of the key issues in retirement planning that we touched on last night's program, but deal with it from the perspective of get back to basics. This is the Money Talk program with Donna Allard and Don Soa. Folks, stay tuned to AM 790. We'll be right back.
Sponsored by United States Traffic Network. Looking to add your talent to a dynamic company? United States Traffic Network seeks a motivated account executive to join the sales team. Send your resume to ustrafficnetwork.com/careers.
Happiness is looking and feeling 10 or 20 years younger than your stated age. With the proper use of medical advances, the goal of looking young indefinitely can be achieved. Hi, I am Dr. Steve Pettirutti, Medical Director for Intellectual Medicine 120. The doctors and nurses at our centers specialize not only in aesthetics, but in face, body, and health-centered life extension. Getting rid of wrinkles, reversing sagging skin, erasing age spots are only the beginning. Maintaining hormonal health, muscle tone, mental sharpness, vascular health, high energy, and sexual vitality are essential parts of the equation. Intellectual Medicine 120 puts real, affordable anti-aging medicine within reach of nearly everybody. Great face, great body, great energy, great life. To learn more about intellectual medicine, listen to my show every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. right here on WPRO.
And not to mention the shedding, I would vacuum the carpet 3 times a week. Frodo was scratching all night long, bouncing on the side of the bed, keeping me awake the whole entire night from all the scratching and chewing. It kind of makes you neurotic.
Does your dog itch, scratch, stink, or shed like crazy?
Mounds and mounds of fur all over the place.
Come to Dynavite for help.
Dinovite.com.
If you want the dog to be healthy, you got to feed it something healthy.
Dynavite is nutrition.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
Our vitamins and enzymes replace the nutrients cooked out of most commercial dog foods.
He gobbles it up. He's not up all night scratching. His shedding is minimal, and it is such a pleasure to have my calm, relaxed, non-shedding puppy back. And I have to thank Dynavite for that.
Don't let your dog itch, scratch, stink, or shed like crazy.
Come to Dynavite for help.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
Dinovite.com.
Thanks for asking, but I'd rather not send you nude pictures. I'm camera shy. I already said no. It's against my religion. I'm giving my dog a bath. You can have pictures of that. Pressure gives me hives. Under my clothes, I'm a robot. Hold on, let me ask my mom. Sorry, my webcam is broken. I'm worried they'll get passed around school. Unfortunately, I just had my clothes surgically attached to my body. If they got out, I might never be president. I'm already naked, under my clothes. Not even if you were all 3 Jonas Brothers. I have a rash. I have nudophobia. I have lizard skin. The more you ask, the less I want to. You're not the boss of me. Nudity makes me vomit. I'm a vampire, so I don't show up in pictures anyways. Your badgering has really killed the mood.
When someone is pressuring you to do something you don't want to, how many ways can you say no before they get the message? Let us know at thatsnotcool.com. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is Money Talk with Don Soa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we are back to the Money Talk program. I'm Don Soa with Donna Soa Allard here in studio. On last night's program, I had an opportunity to start a conversation related to probably some statistics that come out that have surprised this. Even I, on occasion, will be surprised by it. And the reason that I would even tend to be a little bit surprised is because there's so many sources of opinion and information and, you know, warnings, honestly, from the groups like the AARP who focus, you know, on people who, ideally people over the age of 50, but the reason they choose to come up with articles that deal with these types of issues, looking out into the future and asking people, are you thinking about the future? I mean, as financial planners, we sometimes get lulled into a false sense of expectation that people are, hey, everybody's interested in planning and they should start doing it when they're really, really young.
Everybody who comes to see us is, and I think that you're right. I think we do kind of, I don't want to say lose touch with reality, but lose touch with the masses sometimes, because we do live in a world where we're constantly focused on tomorrow. We want to plan to make good decisions with our money today so we can meet our short-term goals and our needs today, but also to ensure that we have a comfortable and secure future.
Well, you know, and the people that walk in the door of our office, you know, you could come in there any given day and find folks that are in their 80s, even early 90s, and you can find their grandchildren who are now young couples with families of their own. So, I mean, thankfully, you have a senior who has benefited from the time and effort and investment that they made in the planning process. And they passed on their wisdom of having done that to their children, some of whom are now all of a sudden in their 50s and older. And they now have children in their late 20s, even entering their 30s. So I would think that if you've got two generations of a family that have a belief in long-term planning, even if it's compartmentalized, where you're focusing on one goal, like just retirement or something mm-hmm. like that, the idea that you can use discipline, an understanding of the goal setting, and time to make some rather extraordinary things happen. We're great believers in it. I kind of introduced you to it at an unusually younger age, which is great. But then you learn very quickly. Well, now, geez, now I got to get a job so I'll have some money so I can do some planning. Because in the end, even though we're encouraging, hey, take even little amounts, small amounts of money, but put it away systematically over time and start early.
Well, and that's really the key. The sooner you start, the less you have to actually save in order to be successful in the long term.
Now, the commentary that I was discussing on last night's show was, quite frankly, for people who did not have the ability or forethought to start the planning very young. So now it's all of a sudden people saying, geez, I don't really know if I'm ready to retire. How much money do you think I'll actually need at age 65, 66 in order to retire in a reasonable and independent fashion? And the article that actually was put together by the folks over at Motley Fool, they run some of the basic numbers. And I actually ran into a couple of people today that had heard part of the show, and they were asking some specific questions about it. I realized that we really needed more time to zone in on it.
The idea of saying how much do I need to save for retirement is just so broad and subjective and different for everybody. You know, I know there was, I think it's, was it Prudential that used to have a commercial where people are walking around with a number on their head that says, what's your number? And it's not how much you've saved, but it's how much you need. I think in the idea that, you know, we all have very different needs when it comes to retirement. So the idea of saying how much do I need to save is less meaningful than to say how much do I need to be able to generate an income. So instead of just focusing on saving, you're focusing on all your available resources to say, what do I need to generate? What do I need to produce in order to support a lifestyle? And then back into the number.
Well, some of the statistics they at least started out with, they were assuming, okay, let's look at somebody who's maybe 60 and going to be getting retired, thinking about retiring in the next 5-6 years. So they're looking at 66 or 67. But they said, okay, let's look at what we do know. And what we do know is, for example, the average, now here we go again, the average American will actually receive somewhere in the range of about $17,000 a year from Social Security. So there's possibly the one dependable source of income that they would have, a check that they're going to be receiving each and every month,
yeah,
probably wired into their checking account. So if you know that you're going to have that $1,200 or $1,300 a month to work with, the real question, I guess you could ask two things. Number one is, what does it take to be me in retirement? But they also, the only problem I did have with the article is, and I understood this, was that they kept using the concept of average. Who is the average retiree? Who is the average American?
So average
Social Security.
Very high income and very low income.
And they said that the average family, if they have that Social Security to fall back on, would probably need to have to earn about an additional $2,500 a month or $30,000 added to the roughly $15,000 to $20,000 from Social Security to come up with that about a $50,000 annual income.
Fidelity has a study, and I like the way they describe it because they kind of give you milestones to say that, I don't remember what year it came out in, but I know that it was like by the time you're age 35, you should have saved one times your current salary in your tax-deferred plan at work. So if you have a 401k at work and you're 35 and you make $100,000, you should have at least $100,000 in your 401k. And by the time you're 45, you should have three times your current salary at that time saved in your 401k. And by the time you actually retire, you should have saved eight times your then current salary in your tax-deferred retirement program in order to be able to replace 85% of your income when you then consider taking in Social Security. So if your goal is to replace 85% of your income when you retire, you should have eight times your salary to work with that and, you know, what you get from Social Security. And I like that because then you're not talking about averages and specific numbers. You're saying, well, if this is your life and this is what you have set up and you want to be able to replace that, this is roughly what you need to do. And it kind of gives you markers along the way. That's a fidelity study, and that is one that I like to use.
Well, this particular study with Motley Fool and the analogy they were using, they talked to a number of different financial planners as part of this. It's completely different. And by the way, very careful to mention this because I've had people mention to me, say, well, geez, Don, I've looked online. Which you know, have you seen some of the computer programs for calculating retirement needs online? I said, there's a lot of them on there. They're free. Yahoo has them, Yahoo Finance, MSN Money has them.
And the free ones are a great place to start. I think, well, if you're looking to start somewhere, absolutely go and check those out.
There's one thing that they all have in common that you have to understand, and that is that they all use a method of calculation known as capital depletion. And capital depletion requires you, by the way, how do you know that they're doing this? Because the last question they ask on the questionnaire is,
how long do you live?
Well, they don't ask it that way. They ask it, but it's the same question. They say, and for how long would you like to receive this income? So, you know, the person's, what the next calculation you're going to make is they say, well, geez, I'm 65 now, and I'll live. And you, they said, you know what the average age was when those questions were asked? 89.
85, people are going to live till they're 89.
85 to 90 was the average age that people thought they would live.
Which isn't bad, right? I mean, that 90, that's a pretty good life. But then you have to stop and ask yourself, do you know anyone older than 90? Are you related to anyone older than 90?
Well, my father's parents died in the early 70s. Mm-hmm. My grandfather on my mother's side died in his 50s, but he had the body type where you knew, somebody once said, we knew he was going to have a heart attack sooner or later. But on the other hand, Grandma McDonald lived into her 90s, and your grandparents, my parents right now, who are the children of that
mid-90s
environment, in March will turn 94 and 93 respectively. I would not want to get to age 85 or 90, which was my planned situation, and actually lived my life according to the plan that I created back when I was in my 60s and drew out the amount of money that the plan said that I could and did things the way that they suggested, and then found myself still here at 85 or 89 years old with no money. That could be problematic. So, I mean,
what would you say? I'm not supposed to be here. I'm not even supposed to be here.
Well, I'm going to have to go jump
what
off.
Would you do?
Well, jump off a building because the old joke was, I'll take the gas pipe, you know, because, you know, I says, I'm not supposed to be here anymore. But
you are. So you have to be able to live, and you have to be able to pay your bills, and you have to be able to meet your needs.
Well, when I first sat down and introduced you to a financial plan with clients, I told you that we're going to use age 100. And as it's turned out now, we're hearing more and more. Actually, matter of fact, I think another financial planner who does radio all over the place, we're not going to promote anybody else, but who does radio, he's telling people, he's saying that financial planners today who do a lot of retirement planning, especially with young families, with either the baby, not the baby boomers, but the millennials or younger, he says should be using 120 as the target age. Now, that may be a little bit of a stretch, but I don't think it's that big of a stretch. I think with technology and nutrition and just,
you know,
a lot of other factors.
I have clients come in who swear nobody in their family, no men in their family live past, you know, 75. No one has done it. The idea that they would be the first one to do it would be crazy. And I always say, fine. You can think you're going to die whenever you want to, but if I'm planning for you, I need to plan for you to live, because I promise no one was ever angry when they died and there was money left. But if you run out of money because you plan to die sooner, you'll have a very different reaction.
Before we go into the next segment, simple retirement philosophy, and that is, number one, I don't want my money to be depleted over my lifetime, number one. Number two, when you're doing retirement planning, plan for a longer period of time. Mm-hmm. I use what we call capital preservation. The job that I have now, I call a money machine. When I retire, I give up that money machine, and hopefully I've built my own that will support me for the rest of my life. We're going to talk when we come back about the money machine that you've built yourself, how big, how powerful, and how efficient it needs to be to actually work. This is the Money Talk Get Back to Basics program with Donna Sowa Allard and myself. I'm Don Sowa. It is, in fact, Mardi Gras, Fat Tuesday. Don't look at me like that. You know what? Oh, yeah, Dad, I understand Fat Tuesday.
No, Dad. I took French, so I know what it means.
Mardi Gras. Okay. Well, anyway, we'll be right back, so please stick around.
Welcome to the Maya Miguel Challenge. Meet Maya and the gang.
Oh, hi. I'm Maya.
Maya and her friends want you to get up and play, because it's always more fun to be active.
There's mountain biking, boating and fishing, mountain climbing and spelunking. Let's get started.
Get ready to take the Maya and Miguel Challenge.
Let's see.
Just go to letsmove.gov and look for Maya and Miguel. You'll find tons of fun activities that'll help keep you healthy and active. Muy activo. You can also check out healthy recipes to try with your family, play cool games, and get free downloads. So come hang out with Maya, Miguel, and the whole gang.
Go!
Remember, whether you play sports, run, dance, or jump in place, just get up and play at least an hour a day. And don't forget, eat healthy to be your best. Maya and Miguel will show you how at letsmove.gov. That's letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and the Department of Health and Human Services.
Men, are you tired of those daily blue enhancement pills that take days, weeks, or months to work, if they ever work at all? Listen up. Now you can take Red, the new natural male empowerment pill that works on demand. Even your partner will notice the difference the very first time you use it. To prove Red won't disappoint like the others, you're invited to participate in our nationwide I Take Red Partner Reaction Guarantee Trial. We're seeking participants for this nationwide trial, not only to prove it works the very first time you try it, we guarantee your partner will also notice the difference. Forget those slow-acting blue pills and join those who proudly take Red. Over 50,000 pills have already been claimed and supplies are limited. So to ensure your participation in this free nationwide trial, you must call now.
Superior Virility on Demand. You only need to take Red once to see what all the fuss is about. Call immediately to participate in our free nationwide trial. Call 800-930-7830. 800-930-7830. Be one of thousands to proudly say, I take Red. 800-930-7830.
Winter is the perfect time to have tree work done at your home or business. So call the experts at Tree Solutions by Seascape at 800-294-5296. With leaves off the trees, their licensed and trained professional arborists can work more cost-effectively to get the job done. Plus, call Tree Solutions by Seascape now. You'll save 10% on any winter tree work. That includes tree removal, trimming, stump grinding, pruning, brush clearing, and deer repellent. The best lawn guys are the best tree guys. Tree Solutions by Seascape. Frozen ground means less vehicle damage to your lawn and less damage to the annual and perennial trees that are dormant this time of year. Winter is here, so take care of those dangerous trees before the snow or ice does it for you, causing damage to your home or property. Tree Solutions by Seascape has the latest equipment available so they can get to the hard to reach places that typical bucket trucks can't. Call Tree Solutions by Seascape now and save 10% on winter tree work. 800-294-5296, seascapeinc.com.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we welcome you back to the Money Talk program, everybody. I'm Don Sowa with Donna Sowa Allard here in studio. Let's get back to basics Tuesday. In this last segment we just went through, we were talking a little bit about people and their expectations. And I guess there's been a number of studies that have been done lately. And because there's groups out there like Fidelity, Vanguard, AARP, Investment Company Institute, the whole bunch of them out there, they're always looking at statistics. They're always trying to figure out really what it is that, you know, the consumers and savers and investors have to do to be financially independent when they get to retirement. So we're not trying to be greedy here. We're not saying, oh, who want to be wealthy when you get to retirement. We don't say that because everybody's definition of wealthy is different.
Well, we were talking about during the break, you know, the number in the article that you read of $738,400 being the average. Well, that means nothing if you're someone who has lived comfortably off $40,000 a year in general. It also means nothing if you're someone who has required $150,000 a year in general, right? I mean, that's the average. So you need to really get into it and do some work to figure out what makes sense for you in your own situation and what you need.
See, the topic that we were discussing last night's show, and yeah, Donna is right, the number that the Motley Fool Group and their analysis came up with indicated that the average person in the country, just as the average would receive about $17,000 a year from Social Security, the average was going to need about $738,000 to $740,000. And what the way they came up with that, rather than using some of the other models or just plugging it into a computer program with a mortality table also, was they simply said, look, we're going to assume, using what they call the 4% rule, and we'll talk about that, you know, the idea that there's a rule. But I promise you, it was higher than 4% at one time. But right now, they use the 4% rule, and they said, if you had a program in place, now this falls under the category of capital preservation, so we're not going to be spending the principal here. That means you've got to create a plan that has the ability to generate, on average, over time, about a 4% return. And then you pull out, using perhaps a systematic withdrawal, you pull that amount of money out. And the reason that you're going to be using systematic withdrawal, which may require you to sell some shares from time to time of your funds or however you're doing it, but doing it in the context of a reasonable return level, is because finding investments out there, whether they be bonds or stocks that pay mutual funds, finding them that would pay 4% or greater, on average or historically, that's getting tougher and tougher to do. It's getting very difficult. And we don't want you to be taking or assuming the level of risk such as with junk bonds or other things. In other words, very low-rated bonds or instruments that may pay you a higher dividend because you're carrying more risk. The essence is that as you get older and as you get into the point where the money becomes critical, and of course, when your savings and investment become your money machine replacing your job, then I think those dollars are critical. So the 4% rule suggested how much we would need. If you're getting $17,000 or $18,000 from Social Security, need another $30,000 or $2,500 a month to get you up to very close to, $50,000 a year to live on. And of course, these were average numbers they were looking to. So that means you're going to withdraw about 4%, and that's where the 738 came from. The problem with that was now they, if you read a little further into the articles, they were suggesting that you may not need that level of income consistently as you get older, perhaps as you become less active and this and that. Maybe the amount you will need from that plan will actually go down a bit, so that will accommodate the fact that the cost of living would affect the purchasing power of that $30,000 you were generating.
Sure, and that's consistent with how we plan. We assume that you're going to spend more in the beginning of retirement when you're healthier and younger and can do more, travel more, eat more, just be more active in general. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
But that said, I'm a great believer in planning for what you don't know. And that may mean, do you suddenly realize what the uninsured cost of a health care problem will be for you? That may start earlier than you expect in retirement. I'm a great believer that, yes, the amount of money you spend will change. What you spend it on will change. But it's entirely possible that you may need, based on whatever level you start at retirement, the first year of retirement, you may actually need more money over time as the cost of retirement spending goes up. Well, just because you're not playing as many rounds of golf or fishing as much.
You can have that barbell effect, right? Front-loaded spending, and then you kind of slow down. And then usually towards the end of life, the last year or 2 years can tend to be more expensive specifically because of healthcare needs.
Well, so my way of looking at it with a capital preservation model would be to use, now they're using the 4% model in the Motley Fool analogy. I would say use 4% if you are confident that you could generate 5.5% in your investment plan on average over time. Now, again, none of these things are guaranteed, but there was a time when people were using 7%, 8%, and even 10% average return as their expectation, even in a fairly moderate portfolio. And nowadays, we're telling people, no, something more in the 4% to 5.5% range is going to be far more reasonable as a prudent and thoughtful number, not guaranteed, but more reasonable in terms of expectation over time. And it's not, you're going to have some years where you have a negative year, and you're going to have some years, like last year, where you have double-digit returns. But again, you're thinking in terms of averaging these things out. But you also have to have the discipline to draw out the amount that you need based on the budget you've planned. So let's say it is 4%, and let's say your average is 6% is what you've been enjoying in the portfolio. Well, that other 2, you better leave compounding and growing inside your plan so the principal itself is actually growing over time to accommodate the unexpected expenses and things that will occur as you get older in life. But also, remember, good planning is also not about wealth, it's about choices. And I would like to feel that if, you know, if I found as I got older that I didn't need as much money as I had, well, maybe I have the ability to be more generous. Maybe I have the ability to be more benevolent, whether it's to my family, or whether it's to great causes that I think that my community could use some help. I'd like to feel that I could do that if that's important to me. Now, and if I don't need the money, maybe there is an opportunity for me to be a bit more benevolent. You know, planning for benevolence is not a bad thing either. But understanding what how much money you really need to have choices. So suddenly when people are telling you, you're not going to need between $700,000 and $800,000, Donna, at a certain point, and if you are, the later you discover this, the bigger problem you're going to have.
I'm going to say, something tells me that I'm going to need a lot more than that since I'm just in my late 30s. I'm going to need a lot more than $700,000.
Well, you were using that formula that said each decade it changed the amount that you actually would have.
Yeah, so by the time you, if you retire at normal retirement age of 67, to replace 85% of your income, you probably want to have 8 times your final salary saved. Yeah.
So if your final salary is in fact $1 million, which it likely will be, then you're going to need to be able.
I'm going to need to save a boatload of money.
You're going to need to generate, 85% of that.
But you know, this for my generation, for people in their early 40s and late 30s, we're the first ones who will really need to be saving millions of dollars as opposed to hundreds of thousands. It's a big difference to kind of wrap your head around.
Yeah, well, and people who don't wrap their head well around the concept of
start early
of inflation and the cost of living, think of it from a level of simplicity. If you look at the history, granted, we've just gone through a period with almost zero inflation. But mm-hmm. if you look at historically, it's been closer to 3%. So if we want to use a number that is historically accurate as opposed to most recently, I would say use that.
You definitely want to.
Well, then use the number and allow for compounding. Think to yourself that, you know something? I will actually need to accommodate a cost of living every 10 years that could go up between 25 and 30%. So if I can live comfortably the year that I retire with $100,000 a year, I may very well need $130,000, $135,000 when I'm 70 or 75, and more when I'm 85. But in other words, it's going to get bigger. So you could very well be in your latter decade of your life, having retired with $100,000 in your 60s, but all of a sudden now in your late 80s or even 90s, you need closer to 170 or higher.
Yeah.
Just by the way, not to
Absolutely.
Live better, just to accommodate
just to keep up with inflation.
The services, the goods, the
life.
Especially
when you consider what healthcare represents as a share of your budget the more that you age, and the fact that healthcare has a higher level of inflation on it than the average. It's above 5%.
Yeah, I can remember a year or two ago you did a show where you were talking about how the last 2 years of the average person's life represents about 60 or 70% of their healthcare costs.
The share of healthcare costs.
Of their entire
life. Depending on your situation. We know there are some people who go to bed and just fall asleep and don't wake up, but that's not all of us.
But you know, so. They said, again, here we go back with that phrase, the average American. Mm-hmm. But you were running your analogy that you said 8 times or whatever the number would be needed in retirement. That one, every person who ran the calculation would come up with a different number,
sure.
Assuming that their average income was going to be a little bit different than their brother or their next door neighbor coming up with those numbers. But right now, of course, speaking of these issues, we mentioned that we haven't really the issue of inflation. Now, we've talked about it here on Money Talk for years. Maybe I was a little premature assuming that the Federal Reserve would start to unwind their quantitative easing program, which has been their stimulus program, which has been intended to keep interest rates very, very low. And they did it by buying bonds in the open market. That was one method. And by buying bonds in the open market, it pushed prices for bonds higher. There's a lot of demand. They were buying $85 billion a month.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot. That's like $1 trillion a year. So, well, guess what? Now here the Federal Reserve's balance sheet is like $4 trillion.
It's ballooned when you hear
And we said, well, they're going to have to start unwinding that. Well, when they started unwinding it, the reverse was going to happen, that the value of bonds would drop, but the yields, the dividend yields would rise, and that would be potentially inflationary. And, of course, happening in a time where the unemployment numbers are almost below 4%. We're looking at these really unbelievable numbers. As that starts to translate into higher family salaries, higher family household incomes, then that's going to push the prices of everything higher, because in order to accommodate you know, those higher salaries, the companies are going to have to charge more for the services and the goods that they produce as part of the economy. And it carries through to all of us. It carries through to all of us.
That's how we see inflation. But, I mean, I think it's really important to recognize it. We hear rising interest rates inflation going up, they sound like kind of ominous and kind of scary. The inflation numbers that are actually being talked about are not as crazy as you might feel like they are. Even when we talk about the reports on wages and the wage inflation, a lot of the spike that we saw has to do with the fact that we saw one-time cash infusions to people in the form of bonuses that went into those numbers. So, I mean, it has to be really looked into and not taken at face value.
Well, we'll discuss a little bit about how inflation and interest rates and these issues are part of the discussion today on Wall Street and around the world, and how it's affecting both the volatility of the market and maybe affecting the decisions you make about your money going forward. This is the Money Talk program with Donna Allard and Don Sowa. It's Get Back to Basics Tuesday, and we will be right back.
Sponsored by Tax Doctor. Owe the IRS $10,000 or more? Call the Tax Doctor to settle tax debt for less. 800-542-9112. 800-542-9112.
Hi, this is Sarah Bain, head coach of the Brown Bears women's basketball team. Join us for our game Saturday, February 24th at 4 p.m. as we take on Ivy League rival Cornell. This is our last regular season game of the year, so please help us pack the Pizzatola Center as we make our run to the Ivy League tournament.
Pull up three is good. She knew it
that
when she let it go.
The Brown versus Cornell women's game is presented by Alex Anani. Visit brownbears.com for game and ticket information.
And not to mention the shedding. I would vacuum the carpet 3 times a week. Frodo was scratching all night long, bouncing on the side of the bed, keeping me awake the whole entire night from all the scratching and chewing. It kind of makes you neurotic.
Does your dog itch, scratch, stink, or shed like crazy?
Mounds and mounds of fur all over the place.
Come to Dynavite for help.
DINOVITE.com.
If you want the dog to be healthy, you got to feed it something healthy.
Dynavite is nutrition.
The omega-3 fatty acids.
Flaxseed, zinc, alfalfa.
Our vitamins and enzymes replace the nutrients cooked out of most commercial dog foods.
He gobbles it up. He's not up all night scratching. His shedding is minimal, and it is such a pleasure to have my calm, relaxed, non-shedding puppy back. And I have to thank Dynavite for that.
Don't let your dog itch, scratch, stink, or shed like crazy.
Come to Dynavite for help.
859-428-1000.
859-428-1000.
DINOVITE.com.
Hi, this is Kelsey Grammer. Every parent wants their child to reach their fullest potential. That's why Shriners Hospitals for Children is dedicated to helping kids do what they otherwise couldn't. Their specialty pediatric care for orthopedic conditions, burns, spinal cord injuries, and cleft lip and palate is provided at no charge. And Shriners Hospital's innovative research and outstanding teaching programs mean help and hope for even more kids. Call 1-800-237-5055 for more information. Shriners Hospitals for Children, helping kids defy the odds.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we welcome you back to the Money Talk program, everybody, with Don Sowa and Donna Sowa Allard. I don't know. But I guess tomorrow being Ash Wednesday for us, I guess Valentine's, a lot of people are celebrating tonight. You going out with your hubby to dinner tonight?
I hope a lot of other people aren't celebrating tonight.
Oh,
I'm celebrating tonight.
Yeah, you waded into it, but we certainly wish you a happy Valentine's Day.
Well, thank you.
Of all the beautiful ladies I love, you know, I get to work with them too.
Am I number two?
You're not. Well, it'll take in order of age, to be fair to everybody. I don't want to make that distinction. Actually, I love your brother. Well, he's
all right.
The consumer price index is always considered a pretty critical piece of information in long-term planning. But this month's CPI number is going to come in tomorrow, actually. Is going to have special significance because it will be the first CPI number that we've seen since stocks briefly touched correction territory, which is, of course, for those of you who are listeners to the show, know that it's a 10% decline in major averages from the high. The other side of this, too, is that the benchmark 10-year Treasury bond, or Treasury note 10-year, saw its yield hit a four-year high. Now, throughout the nine-year bull market run that we've just enjoyed, inflation really has remained largely in check, and the Federal Reserve has held rates pretty close to zero and done all it could to actually spark some positive pressures, including worker wage improvements Most of that has happened in the last 3 years or so. The President of the United States, in fairness to him, as much as he believes all of the improvements we're seeing now are should be credited to his administration, we will give him credit for the fact that the last year has been better than average, but it has built upon a nine years of economic growth and 9 years of market activity. And the trillions of dollars of wealth that has been really accrued over this period of time can be attributed to policies that were put in effect starting after 2008, the Obama administration coming in with their Federal Reserve at the time with Ben Bernanke, and really pushing programs through that stimulated the economy, grew, came out of a recession in 07 and 08, and did what they had to do on the regulatory front to make sure that banks and financial institutions were going to be solvent and stable and able to pass cash through from Main Street to Wall Street.
And that's the key, is the availability of credit, getting money to people so that they can start businesses, run businesses, borrow, and grow their own wealth. That is really the key to keeping the economy going.
So the government and the Federal Reserve has kept the cost of money as low as they possibly could. That's considered a stimulative activity, or what the Fed, they call accommodative stimulus. They've continued to do that. Now, the new Chairman Powell, who had literally just got sworn in with Janet Yellen retiring here, he's believed to be of the same mindset as former Chairman Powell, Chairperson Powell, Yellen. And, you know, so that we're not deeply concerned that he's going to suddenly shift gears and do things dramatically differently, because he was part of the Federal Reserve. He was a Fed president, prior governor before this. But investors do worry that if inflation does continue to rise, it has been rising slowly, it has not been part of the discussion over the 9 years, but all of a sudden now it is. With the government looking to spend an awful lot of money on a lot of different things, spending money on tax cuts, interestingly enough. Remember, they have to spend money on tax cuts. It costs money. It'll cost about $1.5 trillion over the next 10 years. Infrastructure spending, which is believed to be about the same level, all of these things are potentially inflationary. So, yes, inflation will be a part of the discussion. We'll be watching it very carefully and trying to describe what's happening and how it affects you here on the Money Talk program. Right now the concern will be, will in fact rising inflation push the Fed into hiking rates more aggressively? They will probably raise rates 3 or 4 times this year. That will raise borrowing costs. It will cut into corporate profits and generally choke off some of that oxygen that has been fueling the bull runs, both in stocks and bonds, that we've enjoyed for this last decade or so. Now, they're not doing that because they want to hurt the market. They're doing it because if they raise rates, what it does is it's like tapping the brakes. I mean, if the economy is running very, very fast and very hot, they will tap the brakes a little bit to try to slow things down and cool things down a bit. Because if it gets out of hand, we've seen hyperinflation in the past, and usually it is the precursor to recession.
Well, I mean, really, in my entire lifetime, the push for inflation really has not been an issue. Like, we've never seen the government have to really work inflation into the system in a meaningful way, really, for most of my life, if you think about that. So this is a different kind of...
Yeah. Over the years, when I've looked at different shifts in the economy and the market, the period that preceded the bear market of 2001 and 2. I mean, you had an economy that ran up dramatically. Pricing on Wall Street went through the roof. Mm-hmm. The average price-to-earnings ratio, which is just one metric for cost of stocks, was well into the 60s on average. And even in the tech sector, the NASDAQ, you saw things, triple-digit PEs, which means that stocks were completely out of hand. And that way you had an economy that was really
was overheated,
bubbling over. So what they typically will do is, in many cases, they'll step in, the Fed will increase the rates too fast or too much. In other words, they always overshoot their targets. That's because it really is an art form and not a science in terms of how they handle it. And the Fed, going back almost a century, has not had a great history in getting it exactly right. But, you know, I think that most recently the Fed has been fairly prudent and thoughtful. They've been offering some level of transparency so the markets don't get shocked or surprised. Economists expect the headline inflation for January, which we will see tomorrow, including food and energy prices, to register about 1.9% annual gain, which actually would be a slight decline from the 2.1% that we saw in December. Now, core CPI is predicted to rise 1.7% compared to 1.8%. And the reason they say core, because they will exclude food and energy. Because those are considered highly volatile elements of our economy and of the consumer market. And they in order to use CPI effectively, they have to be able to compare CPI from period to period. And it's impossible to do when you have such a volatile element such as energy and food. Although, if you talk to any...
It's the most meaningful thing in the majority of
people's everyday
life. Especially to
seniors. The cost of food and energy. I mean, it's the heating their homes, putting gas in the car, putting food on the table. These are critical numbers. So the cost of those things do, in fact, matter. It wouldn't surprise some analysts that we were looking at, a number of economists at all, if we saw inflation kick up a little and maybe beat expectations, the 1.9 that they're talking about. We could see higher numbers. And this would further intensify, of course, the pressure that has been moving the market in a bit of a volatile fashion over the last couple of weeks for both stocks and bonds, and probably contribute to the idea that inflation is out there. It's here to stay for a while. And maybe people like us and people like our clients have to start looking at holdings inside their plans that, in fact, either protect them against unexpected inflationary pressure, or maybe even take advantage of them. I mean, what type of investment vehicles are out there that actually go up in an inflationary environment?
So although it is technically you don't have the fundamentals for it, we do see gold typically go up in an inflationary environment. That's one that you'll tend to hold in portfolios.
And there's certain high-quality real estate investment trusts, for example. They're good because, unlike gold, they do pay a nice dividend in many cases. So they're paying you rent.
Even if it hasn't done well in recently, there's a reason to continue to hold it within the portfolio.
They find that in high-quality residential buildings, commercial buildings, they have the ability to raise rents in an inflationary environment when the costs are going higher. The landlord, the owner of the buildings, will be able to do that. So you actually see an adjustment in those types of vehicles. There are inflation-protected treasury instruments out there that are specifically designed to actually...
they've not done well.
Well, no, but
We've seen fears of inflation. They've actually declined
Fear of inflation, fear of inflation. But the trouble is you have to actually have inflation in order for tips to work. And the problem is the trade-off with tips is that the dividend yield on them is terrible. Usually, most cases, under 2%. Historically, when wages are growing at about, say, 4% a year, year over year, which we haven't seen in a while, it's often a guidepost that we are nearing the end of an economic expansion. Oftentimes, that's the level where the Fed is raising rates to address inflation. We're not near a 4% number yet for I don't know what household income has been growing at lately, but it hasn't. I've never heard a number that's anywhere close to 2. So 4, I'm not really worried about. Now, there are other reasons to believe that inflation threat might actually be overhyped a little bit. For one, wages have an uneven history predicting inflation, of course. And during the 90s, inflation fell as wages were actually going up. And the same thing happened in the mid-2000s, according to the folks over at Bank of America and Natixis. You remember? You've heard of Natixis. Treasury inflation-protected securities, which are bonds indexed to inflation, actually have declined in value as inflation fears have actually heated up. But I think that maybe as real inflation comes, they may take on greater value. By the way, you want to look at exchange-traded funds that do that. TIP is the symbol. Wonder what that means. Mm-hmm. Means tip. Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to us tonight. It has been Get Back to Basics Tuesday on the Money Talk program with Donna Sowa Allard and Don Sowa. In the meantime, have a lovely Valentine's Day. And we will, Steve will be here tomorrow at 5 o'clock for more Money Talk. Have a good night.
First off, you robots are a great addition to the accounting department.
But
your auditing and risk assessment.